Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back.
Here we are.
It is time for another live show on
Movie
YouTube.
Night.
Yes, it's movie night.
It's movie night.
Our screen is a little bit closer in than usual. That's unusual. Richard, your phone's ringing.
Why is my phone ringing?
I don't know.
I don't know anybody.
Don't people know what we're doing right now?
It's my daughter.
We're getting ready to talk about a movie.
It's my daughter. Wait till I get hold of her.
I'll talk to her if you need me to.
I know. No, I love movie nights.
Yes.
I didn't know whether I would or not, but I do.
I think that these have been really exciting. I really enjoyed our conversations about movies. Mm-hmm. And what's really exciting is the fact when we were getting in, because you've been out of the office all day. And so at the university.
Like
no. You were busy.
Sounds like an accusation.
No. You've been busy at the university all day.
And
so when you got here and I finally finished up with patients, I came in and we were chatting for a minute and we were talking about the movie. A little bit ahead of the schedule. What a great movie.
I love this movie.
It's so fantastic.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know about it.
You had not seen it before.
See, this is another... Well, you know me in movies, right?
I know you in movies.
You stopped asking.
I did.
Hey, did you ever see that? You stopped asking.
I want to tell the folks this.
Noreen, we're
talking about the next movie we should do. And we haven't decided the next movie yet, but we will. And he goes, have you seen, what is the word? Chocolate Wars?
Chocolate Wars.
He goes, have you seen Chocolate Wars? I said, no, I haven't heard it. When did it come out? And he goes, well, just... 1970s?
No. It must have been. Well, the book came out in the 70s. I don't know when the movie came out. Maybe it was later than that.
I don't know that movie. So.
But it's part of this, well, it's called adolescent fiction.
Right.
Part of that genre. But it would fit into what we're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's exciting.
But I have to tell you, I'm not a big movie. I like movies. I don't see many. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot like you in that regard.
I like movies, and I see
and
movies.
You see a lot of movies.
I see movies.
You used to work at Blockbuster, didn't you?
I worked at Blockbuster, then I worked in a movie theater.
Did you?
Between the two of them, I probably worked there for a good five years.
So that's why
you
saw all these movies?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know about the movie theater experience. Yeah. Anyway, I just absolutely loved this movie.
Right.
I was immediately drawn in, engaged, mm-hmm. and never left my seat for the entire time. And when it was finished, it was one of those things where I wanted to just start all over again.
Right.
Because I know there were things I missed seeing it just once.
Yeah. I was watching it again this morning when I got in at the
last night.
At about 4:30 this morning while I'm watching it again, I texted my wife, and who I know was home asleep.
She was... Oh.
I texted her, I said, I forgot how much I really love this movie.
Oh, my goodness.
So
it's
a great movie.
I can't remember. Emma Watson before or after?
After.
Drawing.
Yeah.
Because she was a little girl to an adult during the Harry Potter series. Mm-hmm. So this is somewhere in between all those things. And she was absolutely phenomenal.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is this was in 2012. So
So it was recent. About halfway through.
Right. Before the last few of the Harry Potter movies. So fantastic.
Anyway,
so we are, of course, go ahead and get this first slide up here so we can talk about what we're talking about. If that makes sense.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And so we're talking about Perks of Being
a Wallflower.
And this is a, I don't even know, would you call it a coming of age movie?
I don't
movie?
Think it is.
I don't think so.
I don't think it's those themes. There are some other themes running through this, but I don't think I would call it coming of age.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's certainly a movie that is about adolescence. It's a movie that, and we're going to kind of approach it from that perspective, the perspective of this. Let's talk about some of the things that this film portrays that suggests or is consistent with what we know teenagers deal with.
Would it be inaccurate to say it's a movie about the high school experience?
Yes.
You know, 13 Reasons Why, besides being a movie about suicide, was also a movie about the high school experience, as is this one.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there's some genre out there that has these themes. because there are recurring themes in these This Is What High School Is Like movies.
Right.
And this certainly had them. And the parallels between this and 13 Reasons Why are obvious throughout.
And we're going to mention a few of those because not only did it have some similar actors and, well, actresses. It was the actress, the mother.
The mother,
Sam.
Hannah's mother and Sam's mother was the same.
No.
Hannah's mother and
Charlie's mother was the same.
Same person.
Yeah, so very exciting. And and it was funny because I had forgotten that it was her.
Yeah.
And so when I saw her, I was like, oh, look at that.
As soon as I saw her, I thought, oh, look who it is. But,
So we're talking about Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Right.
And let's go. So the movie starts out, and you know,
you gotta love that, right?
He starts out with his countdown. He says he starts out the first day by thinking about the last day, and when he was saying that, I was, you know who I thought of? I thought of you. Let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Because
I said that to my son.
You talk to parents about that. You talk to parents about, you know, when your kid is going to high school, think about what you want it to be like when they're walking across the stage at graduation.
When they graduate.
He, on their first day of school, he was thinking about what it would be like on the last day of school.
Is his math accurate?
I don't know. He said 1,385 days.
No. It must be from kindergarten on.
I don't know.
Because it's...
Or he's thinking about...
Because 10 years of school would be... 1180.
I think he's thinking of calendar days.
Oh, calendar days.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that would be about right.
Yeah.
Okay. Not school days, calendar days.
But this is a great way to start out this film because as we go through the film, we're going to talk a lot about some of his struggles and some of the things where he's really just trying to get by from day to day. And you know, he finishes the first day by saying 1,384 days left. And so he is really just trying to get through the day, one day at a time, just to make it to the end.
It's an AA approach to school.
That's right.
One day at a time.
And he struggles. But I think that a great way to... Mm-hmm. We're going to kind of organize the way that we're going to talk about this film. We're going to organize it a little bit different than we have in other movies.
Okay.
Because instead of going through the movie from start to finish, there's these recurring themes and messages that we're going to talk about. And the first is, you know, just the general life of a teenager.
Right.
You know, he talks about when he's coming home from school that first day, he's talking about how miserable it was, how bad it was. But then he says, if my parents ask, I probably won't tell them the truth. That was great.
Classic teenage line.
Right.
This is part of their independence. They're not lying to you. They're just not telling you everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, certainly what he's talking about is he doesn't want to tell them the truth that his first day sucked. He did not enjoy it. It was challenging. He didn't make any friends that first day. It was difficult for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't want to tell them. And he added another line at the end that we're going to, you know, certainly come back to a little bit later, but the second line was, I don't want them to think that I'm getting bad again.
Right.
Just kind of that...
Introduces...
Alluding to... Mm-hmm. There's some other things that we're going to talk about later.
The other theme, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other sort of recurring theme about life as a teenager is their uncertainty.
Right.
You know, you can see that in Charlie, certainly, throughout this film. He's... Even the way the actor talks... He comes across as uncertain, not confident, almost mousy a little bit.
You know, one of the things about this uncertainty issue is that when we wrote that book about teenagers, the middle school mind, one of the things that we said in that book was, as an adult, we know how things turn out.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Kids don't.
Right.
They're looking, they have no idea how this thing is going to end up.
Right.
And the perspective of an adult who knows how it's going to turn, who knows how it turns out, like you and I, we're stable in our careers, we're stable with our money, we're stable with our lives. We know how it turned out.
Right.
Kids look into this chasm and they have no idea where this is going to end up. And
exactly.
It's scary.
Right.
And that's the uncertainty that that all these kids are facing.
Absolutely.
How is this going to end?
Yeah. What's going to happen? You know, they don't, they just
have no idea what's going to happen.
Right. Right. And then the last thing That again, it's just, well, it's not the last thing, but it's another thing another. That is that life of a teenager. It is the consistent fear of rejection. I mean, they are anxious about fear, that anxious about rejection almost all the time. That is a constant in their life.
It permeates every part of their life.
Right.
I did a talk to 40 students at a local high school who are struggling. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they said is they live in mortal fear mm-hmm. of rejection and criticism.
Right.
And now with social media, it's so much easier
right.
to do. And they said, yeah, they all acknowledged. They said, yes, this is the worst thing. It's horrible having to face this every day.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, we see that because rejection is such a significant factor, mm-hmm. we certainly see the teenagers engaging in actions that right. are sort of outside of their character. So Charlie's, you know, he's... I loved it when you could see him debating and fighting it, and he finally walked away from the wall as a wallflower, stepped away from the wall, and went out and joined
and
Sam and Patrick dancing at right. that first dance there. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Others who were a little bit weird.
Right, mm-hmm. right. But then, of course, there's the drugs and the partying mm-hmm. and things like that that, of course, is difficult for teenagers that they
when
deal
you're
with.
In that context...
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's so difficult.
Exactly. Hey, we've got a few listeners. So Noreen has joined us, but we've also have a few other people listening. Dallas and Jane are listening. Both of them are also in New Jersey. So, hey, guys, thanks for listening. So happy that you're joining us this evening to talk about this stuff.
Yep.
So
welcome aboard.
Yeah. Yeah. So then moving on to another recurring theme throughout this film, and this is really that first big, that hint that we got from Charlie that I don't want them to think I'm getting bad again, and that is the idea of teenage depression.
Right. He didn't want his family to worry.
Right.
And that's a recurring theme right. to this whole movie.
He didn't, and there's a couple things to say about this. Well, we've got some bullets up there, of course, but there's a few other things. One is that if you look at all of the characters, mm-hmm. there are points in throughout the film where almost every character presents as a little bit depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Sam or Patrick
Charlie
yeah. mm-hmm. or Mary Elizabeth, all of them present as somewhat depressed at some right. point in the film. And you know, there's this diagnosis called, I keep the slides up, I can put the slide down for now. There's a condition called, a diagnosis called, that used to be called dysthymia. It's not mm-hmm. called dysthymia anymore, it's called persistent depressive disorder now.
Right.
But, I mean, it was sort of referred to as the adolescence, because it was this persistent
right.
Depressive symptoms that are just there for, you know, at a sort of somewhat of a moderate to low level depression
kind of
over
low
a long
level,
period of time.
Low level, chronic, day in, day out case of the blues.
Yeah.
You know, just not exceedingly happy, except in bursts.
Right.
You know, when they're with their friends, when they're at a party, when something important happens.
Exactly.
But otherwise, they have this low level, what we used to call dysthymia.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we refer to that as adolescence because of that reason, because right. it's sort of this underlying, just kind of percolates mm-hmm. there underneath, and it kind of shoots up every
right.
once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we see in this film. And again, it's one of the reasons why I really love this film, because I think it really depicts that well, more so than a lot of other films.
Yeah, my cousin has something on his Facebook page about everybody's struggling with something,
right.
or everybody's dealing with something. And you get that. You get that very clear notion
yeah.
that all these kids, as bright as they are,
mm-hmm.
some are highly intelligent,
right.
some are very wealthy, they have good... So while they have good lives, they are all, I almost said infected,
right.
affected by this low-level depression.
Exactly.
Because there's this chronic depression, not clinical depression,
right.
but this low-level depression
yeah.
that permeates every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so it's there, and again, we can see that in most of the characters of
right.
in this film, that you can just see those symptoms, those behaviors, everything there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we learn as the film progresses, we learn about Charlie's history of depression.
Right.
And man, when he expresses that, you know, he had eaten the pot brownie, and he was talking to Sam while she's making his milkshake.
He wanted a milkshake. He had the munchies.
And then he, did you get it? Later on, he goes, man, this milkshake is so good. It's almost as good as the first one. But right. When he says, that's my best friend, Michael. Yeah, he shot himself last May. Mm-hmm. Kind of wish he would have left a note. You know what I mean? And then he's like, I got to go to the bathroom.
He has to go to the bathroom.
And it's, you can, right then you get this, okay, this guy, this is the history that, well, this is
that's
one of the
part histories, of the history, right?
Because we also get the hints about Aunt Helen,
right?
But this is where we're starting to get, and what we know or what we can take from that scene, I think, is the fact that, you know, as some of those defenses come down,
right?
His came down because of substance. It was assisted by a substance.
Yes, it was disinhibited.
Right. As that comes down some,
right.
People begin to share their true feelings, mm-hmm. and their true thoughts. And, you know, this came out about him. So you know that this is something that really weighs on him. Something that is part of his mindset all the time.
And isn't it interesting that as his parents were fine, involved and engaged, but he only shared this with his friends,
right?
And yeah. that's what teenagers do. That's why I call this the high school experience, because these are the years when they are more, when they're apt to share really important issues with friends rather than family.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. He didn't tell his sister,
right?
His brother wasn't there, but we're going to get into his brother in a minute. But he told his friends.
Yeah.
Yes, it was assisted by pharmaceuticals, but yeah. he still told his friends. Yeah. That was the place where he could do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not home.
And it is not, I don't think, circumstantial that it was Sam that he said that to. Because he was closest to Sam.
Oh.
He was...
It was
he,
not by
he
accident
liked her, right.
That he disclosed this to
right.
her.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that he that was somebody who he felt
he could
confide
trust.
With.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, now, another thing that comes about around this same time is Charlie says that to Sam. After he says to Sam
about Michael,
you see that she was taken aback.
Profoundly affected
right.
by that. Right.
And so she says something to Patrick. Mm-hmm. And then Patrick does that wonderful toast to our new friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was so moving when, you know, Charlie says, you know, I didn't think anyone noticed me.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, there is this sort of bipolarity in adolescence between, on one hand, they feel like they are all alone. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, they feel like everybody's watching them.
Right.
And so these
the adolescent fable.
Yes.
With nobody notices me.
Right. And it's a fascinating comparison, because these two things really do exist at the same time, even though they feel like they're somewhat mutually exclusive. How can you be the only person dealing with any mm-hmm. of these things, but at the same time, everybody's exactly. watching and
yeah, the
watching
juxtaposition of those two. It's just fascinating to watch, because
right.
it happens all the time in this
all
movie. And it happens to all teenagers.
Right.
You know, that nobody notices me. I'm not important. I'm unimportant. But yet, everybody's watching
right.
me and what I'm wearing, and I have to have my hair a certain way. And everything has to be perfect because everybody's watching me.
Right.
And yet, juxtaposed, superimposed on that mm-hmm. is, I'm all alone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that is what we've been talking about here with this adolescent experience.
And it's part of the teenage confusion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very challenging. So we wonder why teenagers are so confused sometimes.
Why they act the way they do.
Because they have these two, again, almost mutually exclusive thought patterns happening at exactly the same time.
And as you said at the beginning, this chronic fear of rejection.
Right.
You know, that is in the right. back. It's like that's the program that's playing in the background.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those of you who are parents out there with teenagers, you know, you have certainly experienced this with your teenager where they will say one thing.
Right.
They'll say, nobody likes me, nobody wants to do anything. Mm-hmm. And then they are going out because, oh my gosh, you know, they're going to be there. And so I have to look this way or I have to
right.
do this. Or
you everybody's can't, going to notice.
You can't be there with me. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, how can you not know anybody, but then at the same time, you're concerned right. because everybody's watching you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a very real experience for yeah. adolescents. Mm-hmm.
It's like living your life in a dryer cycle, you know.
Right.
You're bouncing around in the dryer,
right?
With all these conflicting feelings, and if you can just remember what it was like for you, and these movies remind us of
right.
what it was like.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's oftentimes it's just too much.
Yeah. Because again, we think back. Oh, you're going to make it.
Yeah.
Well, they don't know
but
that.
Again, we already know the end.
We know we made it. Okay.
Right.
They don't.
Right.
I don't know that I'm going to make it.
Right.
I don't know that I'm going to get accepted to the main campus.
Right.
You know.
Now, what we see is with his depression. Now we were talking about dysthymia or persistent depressive disorder right. a few minutes ago, and certainly Charlie's depression is different than that. Charlie's depression yeah. is true major depressive
Charlie
disorder.
Charlie had some PTSD and some
right.
real clinical depression.
Right. So his is a little bit different than that. But what we did see with this is when Charlie befriends Patrick and Sam,
mm-hmm.
you can see much of his, so much of him changes at that time. You know, when he says, makes that statement, I didn't think anyone noticed me.
Right.
And in the subsequent scenes in the film show that he's starting to loosen up. He's smiling, he's laughing, he's enjoying mm-hmm. things that were bothering him, like the girl that
right.
has made straight A's since kindergarten, who's sitting next to him in his
yeah.
English class, who keeps calling him names.
And yeah.
getting him beat up in the bathroom. You know, those people aren't bothering him anymore, or,
right.
or what they're saying doesn't affect him
doesn't
anymore.
Affect him. Right.
Because he doesn't care, because he has a connection.
He's been immunized.
Yeah.
Against the criticism by these newfound friends.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put this in the bullets, but it just came to my mind as we were talking, because as a message for parents, we often evaluate our kids' friends.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we want our kids to hang out with
certain kinds of people.
And remember the look on Charlie's face when Mary Elizabeth showed
oh.
up to pick him up for the dance, right? The Sadie Hawkins dance.
Oh.
Now,
that was painful.
It was painful. But this is something that's really important, I think. If we look at how Charlie changed with his friends, with Sam and
mm-hmm.
Patrick, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mary Elizabeth is not Sam or Patrick, but that was a group that he was getting very close with.
Yeah.
His mood, his depression was lifted
mm-hmm.
when he became friends and got into that group. His parents probably would have rejected most of those friends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But those friends served a very important purpose for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be careful as parents that we don't try to micromanage or, you know, arrange our kids' friendships such that they are
mm-hmm.
only interacting or engaging with friends that we want them to engage with.
Right.
Because you never know who it will be that will create, that they'll create the connection with
right.
that could pull them out of
pull
a very dark place.
Right. Yep.
So that I wish that I would have thought to put that as a bullet for a slide earlier, but I didn't.
Yeah, we worry about our kids' friends, and of course, the first thing we worry about is drugs and alcohol,
right.
you know, and other illegal kinds of activities. So yes, it's wise to be careful of those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But in the main, our children are seeking people who can help them through this very difficult passage that
right.
they're going through. Okay, and we don't always know why they select certain people. To do that with.
Right.
But they're entitled to have some help and some support.
Exactly.
And if they can't get it from the alpha males and the alpha females, they'll take it where they can get it.
Right.
And again, we have to allow that to happen, because if you cut them off from everybody, they're not going to tell us the most mm-hmm. important stories. They're going to tell it to peers with whom they have established these close relationships, close and trusting relationships.
Absolutely.
Take that away, and they have no place. Hannah.
Right.
Hannah, it was all taken away.
Exactly.
She couldn't tell anybody, and we know where that led.
Right. I'm glad that you brought that up, because we're gonna be getting to Hannah in just a few minutes, because the number of similarities between this film and 13 Reasons Why are important.
Right.
And I think that we can get a little bit of insight into why one path was followed with one person and another path was followed by somebody else.
After I saw this, and again, full disclosure, this is the first time I had watched it for preparing for this. Now, if I was to advise anybody, if your child's going to watch 13 Reasons Why, watch that, and then watch this movie.
Right.
And then you can have a rich conversation
right.
about this experience.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's very different. And we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. So, but the illustration of exactly what we're talking about is the lift, the absence of his major depressive symptoms when he was with that close-knit, tight friendship, that intimate relationship that he had with them, and the recurrence of that depression as soon as that was severed.
The instant he lost that.
As soon as he broke up with Mary Elizabeth the way that he did, which was such a...
Well, it wasn't that he broke up. It wasn't just that he broke up with Mary Elizabeth. He lost everything.
Right.
When that... And at the same time, he lost Patrick for a very different reason. So he lost all of his connections. And once again, we see the disastrous consequences of losing all the connections. That's what kept happening to Hannah. Her connections kept evaporating, kept disappearing. Mm-hmm. And it leads to some pretty dark places.
Right. So we see that happen with Charlie twice.
Right.
We see it after the situation with Mary Elizabeth, and he, truth or dare, I dare you to kiss the prettiest girl in the room, and he kisses Sam and not Mary Elizabeth.
Speaking of poor impulse control as a teenager.
Man.
Yeah, he had to do that, though.
Yeah. I don't blame him. The second time, of course, is when everybody leaves for college.
Yes.
That was bad for
That was bad for him, yeah.
So yes, we when our kids have those relationships, we really need to assess what they're getting from the relationship.
That's right. Not just making a judgment about that child, about that other person, but to try to figure out what your child is getting from this relationship, because it might be very important and you might not want to take it away.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, another... kind of moving on to the next topic, kind of pulls the two things that we were just talking about in together, and that is the need to fit in.
Yeah.
Somewhere. We don't know where. We don't know why, but they just need to fit in. And so, you know, certainly his introduction was that dance. You know, when he was standing on the wall, and the music was playing, and he saw Sam and Patrick out there having so much fun, apparently having so much fun, and he takes that bold step to go out and join them. I'm going to go ahead and say that it's my opinion, that was extremely bold of him.
I wouldn't have done it.
I don't think that I would have been able to
Not as a freshman. I don't think I would have had the courage to do that.
Exactly.
But what he did is he left behind being cool just to go out and have fun.
Right.
That was wonderful.
And we could even say that it started before that, back when he was at the football game. And he was sitting there and he saw Patrick walk past him and go up there. And he moved up and he initiated the conversation with Patrick. And, you know, I love that what pulled Patrick to him was that he referred to him as Patrick and not nobody.
Right.
Because that nobody thing was funny.
That was. And I couldn't figure out what Patrick was doing at this football game.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know then.
Right.
What he was doing at the football game.
Right.
You know, why he was cheering so loudly.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, this doesn't make sense.
Right.
He was at the football game and cheering.
Yep.
That'll make sense later.
Yes, that relationship. So, again, that began it. And then we see the party and the drugs and meeting new people that are very, very different. And again, it kind of pulls together some of the other things that we've been talking about. And here's where the quotes are from that. That fantastic place where, you know, where we want to toast my new friend, and he says, you know, he says something to the effect of, you sit back and you watch and you see, mm-hmm. you are a wallflower. Right. And Charlie says, I didn't think anyone noticed me. And Patrick says, well, we didn't think there was anyone cool left to meet.
Right.
That was
right.
beautiful. I really liked that mm-hmm. a lot, because again, that really shows the connection and mm-hmm. the welcoming in of
that's right.
of Charlie. And again, I don't think if his parents had been there, I don't think his parents would have approved of anyone there.
They wouldn't have seen past the drugs.
Right.
And as a parent, I struggle with it, because parents get so concerned about the drug use.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a drug culture that Charlie was in.
Right.
I mean, those kids smoked a lot of weed, and they did LSD, and
yeah.
they drank. But without the
it's
but his support group came with drugs,
right?
Okay.
And he did experiment with it,
yeah,
but you can see that when he was with the most important people there, and I keep the slides, I've been keeping the slides up forever, mm-hmm. the most important people from that group was Sam and Patrick,
right?
And when he was with them, they didn't do those things,
right? Yeah.
They did those things when they were at the party with all those other people.
Right.
But they didn't do any of those things when it was mm-hmm. just them. And as you said, I think what we fall into with as parents is we look at the whole and we judge all the parts based right. upon the behavior of the whole.
Right.
And sometimes we have to be careful of that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Because it's
because it's again,
overgeneralizing.
He was only going to share these deepest feelings with them.
Right.
He had to be accepted by them. His
right.
parents couldn't support him at school.
Right.
No matter how much his parents loved him, no matter how much we love our children and we support our children and we're concerned about our children, we can't provide them with a school-based peer support group.
Right.
Only their peers can do that.
Right.
And our kids have to have the opportunity to make that group,
yeah.
to make it into that group.
Yeah.
The group will bring some disadvantages.
Right.
None of the groups are pristine.
Right.
And so every group is going to bring some positives and some negatives.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful before
yeah.
you yank those support groups out from under your children.
Right.
Just because they're smoking weed.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah. And you hope that your kid, if they're going to do any of that, that they make wise decisions, and that
sure.
they, you know, don't make bad decisions, I guess.
Right. I mean, look at all these kids. They're struggling with gender identity. They're struggling with alcoholism. They're struggling with drug use. They're struggling with getting into college.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're all struggling with something, and they need the support of each other.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, that's yeah, it's so challenging for these teenagers. So now, oh, here we go. We're going to talk
Sam
a little bit about
Hannah.
The relationship between Sam and Hannah.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Hannah from 13 Reasons. We learn in this film that Sam had a pretty rough freshman year.
Right.
And they, you know, Patrick talks to Sam a little bit about it and tells him a little bit about how she was kind of mistreated, abused, and of course, this makes Charlie even more interested in her, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But many of the things that were said about Sam were similar to the things that were said and have reportedly been
right.
done to Hannah in the beginning of that film.
They
that
had
program.
Similar experiences.
Right.
They were sexually exploited.
Right. Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah,
and so each was sexually exploited in their first year.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And while they both seem to be certainly traumatized by it or negatively affected by it,
right?
And both of them made some bad decisions
mm-hmm.
because of it.
Yeah. They weren't just victims,
right?
Right.
There were many things that Sam did that I think really resulted or really helped contribute to her having a much more positive outcome than what Hannah had. You
right.
know, of course, we know that that Hannah chose to end her own life. Sam, on the other hand, you know, and we were talking about this before we started the program, I think that the big difference with Sam is that she had some support that was consistent. Right. Her brother was there.
Her brother
was Patrick was there for her no matter what.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And because he was, there was this protection that she had.
Right.
And that helped get Sam through. So again, I'm going to go back to maybe this recurring thing that we're talking about this whole time, and that is teens need each other.
Right.
They need each other because that's how they're going to succeed. That's how they're going to be shielded from some of the things that could cause a lot of damage to them. That's how they're going to be able to cope with a lot of the struggles and issues that they experience in their life. They just have to have it. And I think that the comparison of Sam to Hannah demonstrates that very well.
Right.
Another piece is how much, you know, the whole idea is that the emphasis on friends. In adolescence, remember that during the middle school years and certainly into the high school years, there is this dramatic shift from familial relationships to peer relationships.
To peers. Right.
And so all of the emphasis shifts to peers. And so, again, we saw that the importance of that with Sam. But it's important. That's important with all of them. I love it that Patrick, you know, he supports. I think he was talking to Sam, either Sam or Charlie, said, you know, don't make yourself small.
Make yourself small. Right.
You know, and he was really trying to build them up and strengthen them emotionally and mentally for dealing with some of the things. We saw it with the Secret Santa.
Right.
You know, Charlie gets everybody these little trinkets.
Right.
And the guy is blowing bubbles. He goes, "Bubbles, he knows me.
He knows me." Right.
It's that that meant more to them than... Anything. Think about, I love the gift that Patrick got Charlie, the suit.
The suit.
He was all of the great writers had a great suit.
Right.
And he had a suit. And he wore that suit all the time.
He wore it every day.
Every day. So, but you know, it's so important. But I think that the best depiction of that shift is when Charlie was talking to Sam and he was talking about Aunt Helen. And he goes, "She was my favorite person in the world.
Until now.
Until now." Because then Sam became his most favorite person in the world. And that's the shift that happens. That's how it goes from family to peers.
Right.
So, and throughout this film, we were talking about this earlier as well, parents played a very minor role. They didn't see parents very much.
Mm-mm. No, they were really more than tangential.
Right.
Because this was a struggle among the teens.
Right.
It was their struggles, their age-appropriate struggles with each other.
Right.
And it really had nothing to do with their parents.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So parents played a very minor role in this, and that is because most of it was to do with the kids.
They gave them $50 bills. for Secret Santa.
That, to me, that was...
Just give them money.
No.
That's what we do. We pay for everything.
I had a couple of thoughts about that. Because remember later on, too, Charlie says... "My dad can't afford this."
Right.
Talking about when he went into the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that, you know, dad pulled out this wad of cash and gives him a $50 bill when he's Secret Santa, but he can't afford the hospital. And certainly the hospital costs more than $50. But I'm interested in that difference. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that what I concluded for myself is that that's how important it was to his dad that he had a connection with his friends.
Right. Yeah, he was supporting it.
It was important enough that he was going to give him money to make sure that he took care of his friends.
That's what it meant to me.
Yeah.
That this is important to you, so it's important to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. So, all right. What is the next? There's the suit. So... In adolescence, another thing that happens is they explore new identities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are trying to figure out who they are. And part of that is wearing clothes that they've never wore before, like when Charlie's wearing his suit most days, probably. The fact that he played Rocky
right.
in the Rocky Horror Picture
in
Show.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You know, and of all the parts, I mean, Frankenfurter would have been a more challenging right. role to play, but Rocky is a tough position to play. Right. Not because you have so many lines, but because you're not wearing much.
You got to get out there, right?
You're not wearing, and you know, this is where my mind went, mm-hmm. because you know how my mind works sometimes. We have a ninth grade boy who's playing Rocky yeah. wearing basically gold underwear.
Gold underwear. A gold diaper.
Right. Acting with this girl that he's infatuated with, mm-hmm. who's wearing not many clothes.
Not much more. She was in her underwear.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that would be a very difficult position to be in. Just because you would just feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's already, again, as we said before, a little bit mousy, yeah. a little bit...
Talk about getting out of your comfort zone.
Exactly.
You know, we talk about getting out of your comfort zone.
I was out of my comfort zone for him.
Just watching it.
I was like, oh, right. man, I'm so uncomfortable.
Right, right. No, but that was...
But it was good. He stepped up.
Part of his initiation into yeah. the brotherhood or sisterhood or
but
something.
But he had to be there for his friends.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I think that it goes back to that, too.
And that's what it was, that the show somebody had to step up. Mm-hmm. So he was really supporting his friends as well.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So the next thing, I guess, is this relationship with Mary Elizabeth. And, you know, he really struggled with that because he didn't want to reject her. He didn't want to say no. He didn't feel as though he could say no.
Right.
He didn't feel it. I loved it when his dad says, well, then just break up with her. He goes, I can do that? And he walks back up and she's been talking on the phone nonstop for however long. But, you know, he just didn't understand how those relationships worked. But he's trying it out. He's trying to explore that.
She was talking for like 45 minutes yeah. nonstop. And as soon as he picked up the phone, she said, don't interrupt me.
Yeah, right. She just stopped.
But when he said, "Can I do that?" Yeah. I thought, "Oh, you poor dear."
Yeah, and it was nice this line because this line first came from Mr. Anderson, mm-hmm. and now I can't remember if I have Mr. Anderson listed as a bullet on any of the slides because now I'm thinking about two other things that I don't know if I have on the slides, but Mr. Anderson said this to Charlie, and then Charlie repeats it later on.
Right.
You know, we accept the love we think we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful line, I think.
Right.
You know, I know that since I've saw this movie initially, I know that I've used that with some of the patients I work with because, mm-hmm. you know, we get into these negative relationships, whether it's a romantic relationship or it's a platonic relationship, just with, you know, those varying levels of intimacy that we have with different types of friendships. We accept the type of relationship that we feel as though we deserve.
Right.
And that, I think that when we can recognize that, when we can appreciate that, I think that it helps us make such better decisions about right. relationships and mm-hmm. interactions with others. You know, so when you're thinking about, you know, if you're in an unhealthy relationship, you know, think about whether or not you are accepting a relationship, accepting right. a love that you think you deserve,
right.
And then we maybe need to dig into why you think you deserve that type of love.
That's right. That's right. What is it about me?
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I did put it on here.
You do.
Patrick's fine.
It.
Yeah.
Right.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Just looking at this again, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it just makes me, it just brings a chuckle, yeah. this whole scene.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's, you know, this is, and again, you know, I've raised three teenagers now. You've raised 20, I think, right?
Yeah.
Just about.
Four.
And there's no denying the fact that they seem to take responsibility, though typically not for the things we want them to take responsibility
right,
for.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They take on the responsibility of saving their friends when right. their friends make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. They take on the responsibility
oh, they do.
Of, you know, how many times have we talked to patients who, you know, you know, it's a 15-year-old boy who feels mm-hmm. as though it's his responsibility to make sure that somebody's not depressed.
Right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's depressed, and it's like, okay, you can't even stop yourself from being depressed. How are you going to keep somebody else from being depressed?
Mm-hmm.
And but yet they want to take on that responsibility, and it really exacerbates their own issues.
Right. Right.
And so Patrick gets into this fight. I felt so bad for him. Because it was so sad. Because of course, what we know is, and now I can't remember that the quarterback's
name.
But it was one of the football players.
Yeah, the quarterback of the football team.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He and Patrick were in a relationship.
They had a romantic relationship.
It was mm-hmm. very secret. Only mm-hmm. a few people knew. Charlie right. walked in on it early right. on, and he found out. But he was.
But he could.
He kind of played off that he was on. He was had eaten that that brownie. So he was saying acting as though he didn't remember, mm-hmm. but. I guess when Patrick and this football player were together at the football player's house,
right.
the dad, football player's dad walked in right. and started really beating,
physically abusing,
beating the football player. And mm-hmm. so when he came to school, he lied about what happened, and Patrick was really upset about it. Some football players bullied
right.
Patrick, and Patrick ends up getting in a fight. And he's getting beat up pretty good by these football players in the cafeteria. I don't know about you. I'm wondering where the teachers were, but they weren't there.
I wondered if we were going to die.
And but you know what? It's another indication of the absence of adults that was throughout this film.
That would have occurred in the high schools that I know of in our area.
Yeah.
There was enough time. Now, maybe there were adults around, but it would have taken them several minutes to get there.
Right.
And this only lasted several minutes.
Right.
So that whole thing could have played out in most cafeterias.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so while Patrick's getting beat up, you know, Charlie walks over.
Everybody else is watching.
You can see, and I love the way they showed his blackout.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's in the office. Mm-hmm. Or he's standing there and he's shaking. And he's got blood
People
on his hands.
People are on the ground.
And he says, "Touch my friends again and I will blind you." I don't even know what that means.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I had to rewind that and say, did he say blind me?
Yeah. But, you know, maybe two things from that. Mm-hmm. One is, sometimes when you're that angry, you say things that don't make sense.
True. You do get.
And you know, not that I want us to get into this conversation here, but, you know, people will say, sometimes people get so mad, say, you know, I'll kill you.
I'll do this.
They don't really mean it. It's just that they're so angry at that moment that they say mm-hmm. something like that.
And then they get back
reactive, right? Yeah. But Charlie stood up for his friends. He took responsibility mm-hmm. to save Patrick when nobody else would.
Right.
Nobody else could do anything. And he saved Patrick. And what do you think about the fact that him fighting off these guys rekindled his relationship with Sam and Patrick?
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I
That's
was,
how he got back in their good
right.
graces.
Yeah. And I think that there's a couple of different ways that you could possibly interpret that.
Mm-hmm.
One is, hey, this guy will fight for us, so he's, you know, we should keep him around. But what I think that it really was meant to depict, and I found out that the edition that I have of the this the film movie. Has the director cut,
the director
so that
cut.
It has his commentary through the movie, and so mm-hmm. I want to watch it because I would think that probably the true intended message here is that they saw that Charlie cared that much about their relationship that even though they were, you know, angry with him and rejecting him.
Right.
That he would protect them and he would be part of them and he would take help
right.
be with them.
It certainly brought Sam back into his life.
Yeah.
You know, it did Patrick obviously because he saved Patrick, but I think Sam had a look on her face as if to say she has rediscovered something mm-hmm. more about Charlie.
Right.
And that this is a relationship worth having.
And how sad was it when she goes she talks to him and he says, "You're not afraid of me?"
Mm-hmm.
She's like, "No,
right.
I'm not afraid of you." It's just beautiful scenes. Mm-hmm. So later we see, you know, Patrick ask questions like, you know, why can't you save anyone? And Sam says, mm-hmm. you know, you can't put everyone else's life ahead of yours
right.
and think that's love.
Yeah.
You know, all of these again, these ideas suggesting that, you know, they're wanting to take these responsibilities from their friends and from others so that they can, I guess, possibly, maybe, hopefully, you know, help them. So, yeah, going along with this, and we talked about this before, but I don't have a slide for it, is when Patrick kisses Charlie.
Yes.
And there was a moment where you pause and you're like, oh my gosh, what is going to happen now? What is Charlie going
to
do?
What's Charlie going to do?
And I really love the way that he responded.
Yeah.
Because he responded like a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And when Patrick pulled back and he was like, you could see the...
Patrick
was
waiting for his response too.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But he was sorry.
Yeah.
He was obviously sorry. And he was fearful of how Charlie might have reacted.
Right.
And Charlie didn't react.
And just hugs him.
I'm here for you, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And then
they hug each other.
That is what, you know, that kind of friendship and... Again,
yeah,
it's
friendship. Right.
Yeah.
No matter what. That's unconditional friendship.
That's right. teenagers do not... I've been keeping slides up this whole time. Noreen's really going to be upset. But
why?
She doesn't like it when I keep the slides up. So
well,
she always
puts shift on it.
So, but what we also know about teenagers is they are really reluctant to accept help.
Right.
They mm-hmm. you know, I love the way that he connects with Mr. Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, that started on day one. When Mr. Anderson saw him writing the answers to the questions down on the paper.
Yeah, that was good.
And then Mr. Anderson starts giving him books to borrow and you know, things to read and talks to him about his goals and his aspirations. And I think that if we really step back and look at it, that was the beginning of the positive shift for Charlie. When he made that connection with Mr. Anderson early on,
right?
Because he made that connection before he made any connection with Sam and Patrick.
That was his first one.
I think that was the one that started moving him in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if anybody ever wonders why it's important to have a good teacher, or that one, it just takes
teachers
one positive person.
Right, teachers as mentors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just takes one, and then you know. And then when he's, you know, when he's in the hospital,
right?
And you know, I love it that it kind of goes back to, and I think I keep saying I love it. There's just so much about this movie that I like. But when he is there and he's talking about how he feels everything,
mm-hmm.
he feels everybody's pain. He feels he's taking it on.
Right.
He's taking on that responsibility. And the doctor's trying to talk to him about, you know, tell me what happened. Tell me what's going on. And Charlie says, I don't care. And this is a great line.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get better, you have to.
Right.
How many times have we said that to patients? It's just so challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, here's where we start finding out about the abuse from Aunt Helen.
Yeah, because he doesn't care because he wanted to keep it away.
Right.
You know, he didn't want to deal with it. He didn't want to have to ever confront it.
Right.
And he didn't because this happened. He must have been about five or six, seven, something like that. Very young child.
Very young.
Okay. And now he's 16, 15. So he sat on this thing for almost 10 years.
Right.
Never wanted to deal with it.
And he's holding on to, you know, the fact that Aunt Helen left to go get him a gift and died in a car accident on the way. So he's taking the responsibility for that. And that's
for
what he
death.
Says. And that's what he says to his sister,
right.
You know, do you think I killed her? I think I killed her because she was going to get my gift.
Right.
And, you know, I think I killed her. And, you know, and then he says, what if I wanted her to die?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're starting to get this little hint. And that's when the memories are starting to show of her saying things like, you know, don't wake your sister. Don't, you know, be real quiet. And very, very emotional. But it was great that he was able to talk about it. You know, clearly he talked to his doctor about it there at the hospital, because she then told his parents, and you know, they were aghast about it
when they turned and walked down the hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, when we're working with patients, or when you know, if you have a child teenager, child, who is struggling with anything because of past traumas, because of past issues, we really need to work to get them in some type of treatment. You need to get them to talk to somebody. Right. Notice, folks, that he did not talk to his parents about it.
Nope.
He never said anything to his parents had no idea, knew nothing about it.
They didn't know anything about any of this.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So we don't assume that if something is going on that they're going to tell you. If you see something the matter, something troubling your child, your teenager, work to get them the help and support that they need.
And I would put the emphasis on two words. They're not going to tell you.
Right.
And they're not going to tell you.
Right.
They're going to tell somebody else.
Right.
Probably. Okay.
Right.
And we have to allow them the relationships where they can disclose these important things.
Right. Right. Exactly. So get them to seeing someone. Get them to a therapist, to a social worker, to a counselor, to a psychologist.
Whoever
they
can establish, get them to Mr. Anderson.
Yes.
Whoever can establish the relationship. Doesn't have to be the professional. It might be the receptionist.
Yep.
We did that all the time. Sometimes the receptionist who did the intake was able to establish more of a relationship for some reason than we were.
Right.
So we had her come into our staff meetings because sometimes she knew information that we didn't know.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't matter who establishes the relationship. It doesn't have to be a professional.
Right, absolutely.
But so, we have to give our children those relationships.
You've got to. And it's through that relationship that they are going to progress. That's how they're going to get better.
Right.
So we're going to wrap up with two quotes.
I love this quote.
I do too.
Oh my gosh.
We can't choose where we come from, but we can choose where we go from there.
Right.
And that's from the doctor. The doctor said that in the hospital.
Right.
Wow. That's,
whoever wrote this.
Yeah.
You know.
I haven't read the book. This is a book. But, you know, we can't choose where we come from, but we can choose where we go from there.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of the podcast we did about millennials.
Right.
You know, you can't, you know, if you feel as though you were sold a false bill of goods,
right.
if you feel as though you were mistreated, that your parents didn't do this, that your parents didn't do that, okay.
We agree.
There it is. That's where you came from. We can't do anything about that now.
Mm-hmm.
But you can make decisions about where you're going to go from here.
Now it's your decision.
Right.
You know.
And you need to make the decisions that take you where you want to go.
Right. That's right.
The last quote that we're going to hit here is, you are not a sad story. You are alive.
Right.
And that one, I believe, came from Patrick. It was Charlie saying it because I think that he said he heard somebody say it. But you're not a sad story. You're alive.
Right.
Another great, great line. Because when we focus and become so vigilant about the fact that we're, you know, we're a problem, we're, you know, damaged, we're not good, all that leads to are more problems. That just leads to dead ends. That leads to unhappiness and dissatisfaction.
And Charlie knew what he was talking about here.
Yes,
you're not just a sad story.
Yeah,
and he knows because he went up to the knife on the cutting board.
Right.
And Charlie's been there.
Yeah.
And he's got firsthand experience. He's alive. You're alive.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Perfect. So.
Yep.
So as I said earlier, that kind of wraps it up. We have not decided what movie we're going to do next time. And we need to do that. We know that we're going to do it on Monday, September 18th.
Right.
At 6:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know what movie we're going
to
do.
Yeah, we're trying to decide whether we want to stay in this adolescent genre for a time or if we want to move into some other areas. So we should probably decide that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then we'll let people know. As we do podcasts, we'll announce it.
Yeah, we'll announce that and we'll let you know. Because, you know, here's another thought I had. I learned how to do quizzes on YouTube. Did you know I could do a quiz on YouTube? I can. Maybe what I'll do is I'll put a quiz up and we'll let folks vote on what movie I want to do.
All right.
I can say, which movie would you like to do next month? I'll give you four to choose from and you tell me which one you
want. You know, we have some very loyal followers.
Yeah.
We could also ask them.
That's true. we could ask
them. We have several now who are with us each week on a regular basis.
Right.
We might like to hear from them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I'll put it on, maybe I'll put it on the next few podcasts.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll put it on this one too.
Right.
And we'll see what you say. We'll put four different, choices and you guys can choose from those.
Right.
I'm going to choose another group of movies that Richard hasn't seen yet. So
that won't be hard to do.
No, the list is long.
Long and illustrious.
So,
okay.
Anything else?
That's it.
If you haven't seen this movie yet...
Oh, you have to see it.
We spoiled everything, but...
No.
It's still worth it.
This is a viewing pleasure.
It's still worth it.
It is worth spending time with this. I'm going to.
I'm going to watch it again.
I'm going to be watching it this weekend.
So, all right. Thank you, guys. I know that a few of you were able to join us. I know that a few of you had to leave before we were done, but that's okay because the podcast version of this will be out in about, less than 12 hours. I'll have it all edited
and posted
tomorrow morning, bright and early. So.
We're going to go home and sleep real fast.
Yes.
And then come back.
Yes.
Okay.
It'll be great. So, all right. That's it, right?
I'm going to get rid of my leg cramps by then.
Are you? See, no. I wasn't going to say anything, but you brought it up. I one of the reasons I kept the slides up is because you were having leg cramps.
And
I had you kept having to stand up and everything, so I didn't want to. I didn't want to turn it back over to the.
I was glad you didn't. I realized at one point you understood what I was dealing with. As the blood started draining from my. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much for that.
We are a team.
Oh my gosh!
You know what? I would blind somebody for you.
I have to figure out what that means because I didn't hear it the first. He said,
if you touch my friends again, I'll blind you.
Right. But you're right. You made a good point when you said when you have these rage attacks, which is what he had.
Right.
I mean, it was a blind rage. You say things that just come out of your limbic system.
Right.
You know, I'm going to kill you and your whole family. Well, that comes out of my limbic system during a blind rage.
Yeah.
I don't mean it literally.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you made that point.
Yeah.
Because you do. When you get, blood gets shunted from your brain at those times, and you're not smart.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, that is it.
We'll stop there.
Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.